It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter to join the conversation online. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We have a very special show, very special guest today. That is Pete Demilatis from Pro Football Focus. He will join us all show long. We'll talk a little bit about their grading systems and everything with the New York Football Giants. Pete, good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Good to be here.
Excellent. All right, let's start with what you guys do at Pro Football Focus first. And I think it's very interesting, and I think you give fans a pretty good insight into the game with your grading systems. And you have two levels of your service. You have the basic stuff you get on the website for free, and then you have your premium service. Why don't you just explain to the fans what you provide and the difference between your basic free stuff and, if the fans want to go the extra level, what they get for your paid service and what the costs are and all that stuff.
Yep. So Pro Football Focus, we're the only website out there that grades every player on every play in every game. So we're going through and looking at, you know, not only who the ball carriers are and how many yards they rush for, but, you know, who made the key block on the play and, you know, what defender got pushed back or what defender blew up the point of attack to kind of disrupt the play. So, you know, on our basic site, you'll find, you know, our articles and our summaries of what we found from all of our film watching. So we go through every game, we do a, you know, preview, a recap, and now that we're in the off season, we're doing a lot of free agency stuff, like, you know, our top 10 free agents at each position, what every team's needs are. And then on the premium site, it's $27 for the year. You can get access to all of those stats and grades that we're pulling our conclusions from. So you can see, you know, who the top-rated guards are in run blocking, which cornerback has given up the most yards in coverage on the season, which linebackers have made the most tackles, you know, around the line of scrimmage to stop a play, not just a tackle, you know, 10 yards down the field.
Now, I think the question that I probably get most about your grading system is that how can you properly grade plays and players if you don't necessarily know what play is called and what the responsibilities might be on that given play?
Yeah, you know, that's a question we get, and it's valid. And I say that if you watch film, a lot of times you can discern what exactly the team's trying to do. You know, when you see, you know, a guard pulling around and he's trying to get out to the block, and a guy slips out from under him, and you can tell he was trying to block that guy. He was supposed to seal off that play. He didn't, and, you know, that's a bad block. And also, when people say, well, you know, how about secondary coverages? A lot of times you can see, you know, if a guy's, you know, if it's a safety blowing a coverage, if it's a cornerback blowing a coverage based on their reaction or really what, you know, what the typical assignment is, you know, where, you know, there's no reason a safety would leave that entire half of the field open to take a guy underneath. And when people say, well, you're evaluating players, you don't know their assignments. Honestly, this is a reality that every coach is faced whenever he has to scout an opponent. Or if he's in free agency and looking at another team's free agents, you know, the Giants are looking at a guy like Alex Mack, and they don't know what his assignments were on every play, but they still have to make an evaluation of him.
That's a great
and
point.
They can make a very good evaluation based on their football knowledge and their ability to discern what he's supposed to do on each play.
Now, I think it's pretty interesting, and you were telling me before we started, you guys have more than one person looking at each game. So you get two different points of view on the game to make sure that everyone's on the same page. Then you have a review process in addition to that. So you guys put a bunch of eyes on these games to make sure what you see isn't just one person's quote-unquote opinion.
Exactly. And honestly, that's what I think differentiates our system is that, you know, we have a organized way of going about looking at games, grading players. It's not just a, you know, look at and say like, oh, well, I think that guy did, you know, gets a 9 out of 10 on that play or so, you know, something along that. It's not, you know, just judging based on like a dunk contest. you know, we have specific structure for the grades we give to each players. And honestly, on most plays, you know, a player doesn't get a grade. You know, a lot of times, you know, if a quarterback goes back to pass and the guard, you know, gets pushed back like a step or two, but then holds it, then, you know, he doesn't get a bad grade for, you know, he had a good block. That's what he's supposed to do. You know, the defender didn't get to the quarterback, but, you know, he doesn't get a big downgrade because he still got a little push, and that's it. You know, you move along. But, you know, honestly, I think that, you know, the benefit is that because we have so many people looking, we have a structured system, it takes out a lot of the bias that you'll get from just kind of the eye test of looking at a game and saying like, oh, you know, I think that guy did really well without really going through play by play and seeing how they did.
Now, the actual ratings that you guys come up with, they can get anywhere from, I've seen guys rated into the 30s to guys ranked into the minus 30s. Mm-hmm. So is zero then where your average player lies? Is that how the system works? How do these numbers get broken down?
It honestly depends on the position. So, for example, like our top cornerback grade for like a Darrell Revis or Richard Sherman or Brent Grimes, you'll get in the, you know, in the high teens. And meanwhile, you'll look at a defensive tackle or defensive end like a J.J. Watt, and he's an extreme example because he's way ahead of everyone else, but he graded a plus 100 this year.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, and he was our defensive player of the year, even though he didn't win it. And, you know, average, though, for a defensive tackle was in, you know, some of the best were in, like, the high 30s. So, honestly, it doesn't translate from position to position, but you know you kind of have to look at it like a quarterback. It might be a little higher where you want averages more along the lines of like a plus 10. Meanwhile, a cornerback who's responsible, you know, they're getting, you know, they have a really tough job. They're giving up a lot of yards. Like their average is somewhere along the lines of a zero. So it depends on position.
So fair to say though that somebody in the negative rating is a guy that will quote unquote hurt your team, but if they're in the positive, they'll help. Or it just really is dependent on comparing to the other guys in the spot.
I'd say yeah. You know, in general, if a guy has a negative grade, obviously it's not good. but you know, also you want to look in and see. You know, it's. And it even upsets us too sometimes when we see people just quoting our grades as gospel without any sort of context whatsoever.
Right.
If a guy, you know, take a guy like Tremaine McBride, you know, he finished with, you know, the highest grade of a Giants cornerback this season. But he also had, you know, a big grade. He finished with about a plus 7, but he had like a plus 5 in his last game against Washington. So, you know, you'll see like he was more along the lines of average for the whole season, then had like a really great game at the end. So you want to see how they got that grade, not just, you know, what that final number is and say, okay, well, he's better than this other guy.
And this is, of course, what Pro Football Focus does. And Pete here is assigned to the Giants, and they basically have one guy assigned to each team here, and they'll go through it each year. So we're going to focus on the Giants with Pete here from Pro Football Focus. And the one place I want to start, because I think this is one grade that I think would surprise Giant fans based on what they saw from the team and their performance this year, is that you guys did not grade John Beeson out very well this year. Looking at your linebacking free agent list, in fact, he's listed according to your grades as the third worst available free agent linebacker, minus 17.1. Why don't you talk a little bit about how you guys went about grading John Beeson and what you guys saw on tape?
So linebackers often I see have the biggest difference between the perception of how well they've done and our grade for how well they've done. And Beeson's a perfect example of that because you look at his game and he's a very active player. He gets in on a lot of tackles. He gets, you know, he's out there, he's calling plays, and you can see that, you know, he's all over the field a lot of times. But you'll notice when he, you know, comes by, stops a run for 1 yard, gets up, everyone's excited, he's, you know, he's pumping his fist. But then you'll see, you know, a couple plays later, you know, tight end runs a crossing route, you know, catches it, converts the first down, and who's there trailing him. And a lot of times you don't even see this till you look at the film.
Right.
It's John Beeson. He actually, he had the worst coverage grade of any linebacker that we graded this season. So it's just a common, it's a common misperception among linebackers that just because you're active and just because you have a lot of tackles doesn't mean they're necessarily good tackles, and doesn't mean you're, you know, hitting guys at the line of scrimmage. And oftentimes coverage is overlooked because it's in the middle of the field and there's a lot of congestion. But you look at the film and, well, he's supposed to get that guy and he didn't get him. So I know a lot of Giants fans say, hey, Beeson's a must sign. We have to bring him back. I think there is an unspoken leadership quality to him that won't show up in our grades. You know, until you know, someone gives me a wire into the coach's headset and I know what he's calling down to Beeson and what Beeson's doing to line everyone up. You know, we can only go by what we see on film. And on film, Beeson, you know, is a liability in coverage, even though he's, you know, good against the run, and he seems to be a very good locker room presence. So, you know, I'm all for the Giants bringing him back. I just don't agree that he's a must sign, and I think there are some other guys out there that can be just as good.
We're joined by Pete Demilatis from Pro Football Focus. And, Pete, you mentioned bad in coverage. Would you consider him a plus linebacker in terms of stopping the run?
I think, yeah. You know, he has around an average grade for stopping the run for the Giants, but I also think that you know, there's a lot of stuff that he does that, you know, he's a whole world of difference from the other Giants linebackers that
right.
they've had. I also think that, you know, it's almost like a Giants with the Giants fans with John Beeson right now. It's any pour in a storm because they, you know, they've been starving for a linebacker for so long. And there's some good stuff. You know, if you're a Beeson fan and you want to see a great play he made, if you go back to the Oakland Raiders game, Terrell Thomas had that long interception return where he got tackled down at the 5-yard line. And one thing I loved watching on film is 80 yards down the field, after Thomas intercepted that, he's running, is Beeson right behind him. And when Thomas was slowing down, Beeson blew up two guys on a block. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, doesn't always come through in our grades. But you see, like, you know, he's playing hard out there, and he's definitely a good presence on that team. But you know, you look, and he's a good run stopper, but he's not great in coverage. And those kind of linebackers are sort of a dime a dozen these days in the NFL. And I look at a guy like Aaron Henderson last year, who signed with the Vikings.
Right.
And he was a good run-stopping linebacker, not good in coverage. And they signed him for a 2-year, $4 million deal. And I think that's fair. And I think, honestly, that's along the lines of what Beeson should get. You know, you don't need to break the bank for him. And also, after everything we've talked about just now, you also have to take into account he's played 7 games in the 3 seasons before this one. So
a lot of injuries.
So that's
fair.
Yeah. So you know, I think, like I said, Beeson, I would like to have him back on the Giants. I think he's a good presence, but he's not the must sign that everyone is making him out to be.
Well, just a bigger picture than last year, because the way a lot of Giants people in the media, Giants fans, and people around the organization, you know, you kind of saw when Beeson arrived here, that's when the defense really started playing better. He showed up and played his first significant minutes in that Bears game, and then after that, they gave up 7 points, 7 points, 20 points, 13 points, 20, 24 points. Pretty good numbers. Now, was that just a matter of the level of their competition dropping, or was that Beeson's arrival?
Honestly, if I had to put the two biggest factors for the Giants' defense improving, was the schedule getting easier.
Right.
I mean, you look at those first 5 games, and they played 4 playoff teams.
Well, you got Josh Freeman, Matt Barkley, Terrell Pryor, and Scott Tolzien.
Yep, and then after that, they got into, honestly, one of the easiest stretches of quarterbacks that you'll ever be lucky enough to run into in the NFL. I think the second factor, I think not enough people gave enough credit to Will Hill. Him coming back around the same time that Beeson did, Hill, he graded tremendously off of the film that we watched. He finished with the second highest grade of any safety in the league this season. So, you know, that's not saying he was the second best safety.
Right.
But he was, you know, he was very reliable in coverage, rarely got beaten deep. He was a solid tackler. He was always, you know, you saw him, he played downhill a lot and still managed to not get beaten over the top, and that's very rare to see. And I also think that, you know, a third factor, or factor 2B, if you will, is Antrell Roll dramatically stepped up after that first stretch. He had 6 missed tackles in those first 4 games, putting him, you know, it was the highest of any safety in that span. He was not off to a good start at all. And then after that, he only missed 5 tackles the rest of the season. So, and he played, you know, what I thought was a very good year. So, you know, honestly, I think that Hill and Antrell Roll stepping their game up. And I think Beeson had something to do with that, but I don't think he was the single factor that turned around the defense like everyone liked to think he is.
And you wonder if Will Hill's improved play, or rather Antrell Roll's improved play, had to do with the fact that Will Hill's next to him, and all of a sudden he maybe is not trying to cover for Ryan Mundy, who can sometimes struggle in coverage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, I want to get back to the linebacker position here because I thought it was interesting, and I think it was you on Twitter that brought it up, and people were making a big deal about DeQuell Jackson being let go by the Browns, and he's another guy the perception is a top linebacker in the league, but according to your guys' numbers, maybe not quite as good as some people think.
Yep, DeQuell Jackson and unfortunately tackles are still the biggest stat that most people go by for linebackers.
And by the way, I always say this too. Tackles is a bogus stat. Teams qualify them differently. Some teams go off a game tape to qualify tackles. Tackle stat is a mess.
And it's funny because the NFL says it's an unofficial stat.
Yeah.
It's not official. It doesn't go down in any record book that they have. But they still have on their site. People still quote it. And looking at it, DeQuell Jackson, and this will tell you all you need to know, he was awarded 66 assists on tackles, which helped boost his total to 140. We gave him 17 this year. So he had almost triple
wow.
the amount. And you look back at the film, and I'll post a screenshot on Twitter every once in a while of, like a linebacker, like a Kiko Alonso, where there's a play where a guy is – getting taken to the ground. You see two players on top of him. Kiko Alonso is standing next to him.
And he'll get an
assist. And then at the end, he dove in to the play, and they give him an assist. So I think people see the big amount of tackles that DeQuell Jackson has. Say, he did really well. But in fact, he had our second worst run defense grade by any inside linebacker over the last two seasons.
Wow.
So he's an active player. He's another one of those guys who's always running all over the field, but sometimes it's not in the most efficient manner.
All right, let's get to our calls here. We have a bunch of other positions to touch on, but we got three people on the line. I want to get to them before they hang up, quite frankly. So we're going to get to our calls, and then we are going to keep going. Bunch of guys on defense. We'll touch on Linval Joseph. We'll touch on Akeem Nicks. We'll touch on the cornerback situation, which is a big one. We'll touch on the running back situation, the tight ends. A lot of stuff to talk about, but let's get to our phones. We've had callers waiting since the start of the show. And let's go to, and I'm going to butcher this one too, but I'm going to try, Svinung in Norway, who always hits us up on Twitter. Thanks for joining us on the phones. What's going on, buddy?
It's great to be on the show. First things first, just allow me to say thank you to Pete and to Pro Football Focus for the job they do. I frequently use the information that they make available, and it's just a fantastic website, so thank you.
Oh, no, you're welcome. Thanks for reading.
Go ahead, man. What do you got?
I didn't get the chance to call yesterday, so I'd love to comment on yesterday's topic, if that's okay. But if not, I do also have an intelligent question about free agency, but I don't think we'll have time for both.
All right, go ahead, man. Get him in. It's all good.
All right. I just want to say that I'd be terribly disappointed if we pick an offensive tackle at 12th overall. I understand that Will Beattie had an awful season last year, but it's not that long ago that it was also very good, and my guess is that he'll bounce back this year. Now, the real issue on the offensive line is the interior part. Kevin Booth coming back, which I believe is a good thing. He played okay last year, and adds a lot of versatility to the offensive line. David Boss and Chris Knee are also coming back, but they're both on the wrong side of 30 and banged up. And it's quite frankly, it's difficult to picture a scenario where they're not going to be liabilities to the team. And speaking of guards, though, it'll be interesting to see how Eric Herman will develop coming into his second year in the league. We know he's a great run blocker. I mean, he holds the record for most pancake blocks over the course of his college career or something like that. So wow. Let's just hope he's had time to develop into a decent pass blocker, too.
Okay, go ahead, Svinung, real quick.
The way I see it, there are no guards or centers that are worth taking in the first round, let alone 12th overall. I think ideally the Giants should look to trade back, but I think it's going to be difficult to find suitors for that pick simply because the overall talent of this year's draft class is fantastic. So what I think we need to do is to take the best playmaker available. And players that come to mind are, for example, Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle from Pittsburgh. And this has something to do with free agency, because I think it's very likely that Linval Joseph is going to find a new home where he'll get paid handsomely this offseason. And Joseph and Donald are two completely different defensive tackles. Donald is strictly a three technique defensive tackle, while Joseph is more of the run stuffing one technique kind of player.
That's correct.
Fortunately for the Giants, Hankins gives team flexibility in the sense that he is capable of playing both the one technique and the three technique spot, which means that he'd be able to take on the role that Joseph played last season, while Donald would give the team a lot needed pass rushing presence at defensive tackle.
All right. So, you know, one thing at a time. Let's start with your defensive tackle question, and I guess I'll touch on Linval Joseph here first. How did he grade out for you guys this year? And I'm hearing he's going to be looking for a big, big payout here in his first time in free agency.
Yeah, Linval Joseph, you know, he was a very he had a very good run defense grade from us. He was very good at the point of attack. You saw him, you know, making a lot of waves on that side of the ball, and although. Frankly, he wasn't a very, very big impact pass rusher.
Right.
So I remember someone on Twitter mentioning this to me yesterday and saying, oh, well, you know, he was getting a lot of, you know, push in the pocket. But honestly, it didn't show up on film. You know, he had 23 quarterback pressures on the season. That was tied for 25th among defensive tackles. So, you know, it's fine. You know, he's not a liability as a pass rusher, but he's not a disruptive force either. And I think that you're going to see, given his age and given his durability, you're going to see some teams pay for him. And I'm hearing more buzz around him than any of the Giants' other free agents. So I could see this becoming like a Barry Cofield situation from a few years ago where he, you know, was a productive player, not a top-tier player, but still getting an almost a top-tier contract because of, you know, his reliability. So honestly, I think you made a good point about Hankins. I think he can definitely step into that role. I see him particularly good in the one technique on the nose and having, you know, Cullen Jenkins line up there again in the three technique, more of a pass rusher. So and I also hope that the Giants re-sign Mike Patterson because, you know, he also had a pretty good run defense grade. I don't think he's as good as Linval Joseph, and he has a few more red flags with the previous injuries, but I think he can get close enough to that level of performance for just a fraction of the cost. So, you know, I think letting Linval Joseph go in free agency, it's not gonna break anyone's heart, to be honest.
Appreciate the call, Spina. You got anything else for me real quick?
Let me just ask you, because you might say that the value of the free agents and the value of the draft prospects depend on each other. For example, in this year's draft, there are arguably four offensive tackles that are worthy of first-round grades. And I'm thinking that's bound to have an effect on the free agent market when it comes to offensive tackles. And I suppose the same can be said about any position. So my question is, how does this year's draft class affect the value of, said, John Beeson, Justin Tuck, and Akeem Nix in free agency?
Well, I'm not sure, to be honest with you, and thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for checking in. We appreciate it. I'm not sure how much the draft class gets affected by free agency and vice versa. But as we talked about before the show, maybe the deepest free agent class in terms of a position is probably at the cornerback spot this year.
Yes, absolutely. And I think if you want to get the best value, I think cornerback is the way to go right now in free agency, because you look at some of the names we have, and we ranked our top 10 cornerbacks in one of our articles on our site. But you see a lot of big names out there, and you have like a Brent Grimes, who was our second graded cornerback last season, right behind Darrell Revis. You had Aqib Talib, who, you know, has a very good skill set, able to play man to man. You had Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who had a renaissance season with Denver. Alteron Verner, who made the Pro Bowl for the Titans. Vontae Davis, who actually against the Broncos in that Peyton Manning homecoming, he actually had the highest single game grade we ever gave to a cornerback.
Wow.
And so you even look at all those guys, and you don't even need to get one of them, because right behind them you have Sam Shields, who had a top 10 coverage grade back in 2012. He has really good ball instincts. He, you know, gets a lot of interceptions and passes defensed. And you have a Captain Munnerlyn, who I'm a big fan of, because he's turning 26 this year. He had our 11th highest cornerback grade this season. He was sort of a balanced performer. He was good in run defense. He was solid in coverage. And also he plays a slot. So if you let, say, a Terrell Thomas go, you can have, you know, Prince Amukamara and a Captain Munnerlyn starting, and then, you know, once you bring in your nickel cornerback of perhaps a rookie that you draft in the first round, you can slide Munnerlyn over into the slot, and he's kind of taken that role for you. So and then, you know, another guy, Terrell Brown, who's I think has been the best cornerback on the 49ers for the last couple seasons. So you know, there's a lot of good cornerbacks out there in free agency, and you don't even have to break the bank to get a really good one. So I think you could get a lot of value at that position.
Now, see, you're funny. You mentioned Aqib Talib as one of the top cornerbacks available, and he's probably going to get one of the big payouts. But in your grading system, which I find interesting, he actually has a little bit of a negative grade for you guys. Now, does that have to do with his lack of run support, but he's a very good coverage player?
I think it was – honestly, it was this season – it's tough for Talib, but
it was his injury.
I would blame
too,
on the injury.
Him, right?
He was before his injury. He was one of our highest graded cornerbacks.
Got it.
You saw him, you know, locking down Jimmy Graham, you know, one on one, and you know, on a Sunday Night Football against Tony Gonzalez, manning up, and Julio Jones. But after that, he was a huge liability, and I think a lot of people made a lot when. He got injured in the AFC Championship game. But you look, Demaryius Thomas burned him for a 30-yard pass to set up the Broncos' first field goal right off the start. So I honestly don't think he was going to be able to handle Demaryius Thomas very well that day. And he just had kind of an up-and-down season. That's always been the thing with Talib. He shows a lot of talent. At his best, there might not be a better cornerback in the league, and that's including, you know, Revis and Sherman. But he just doesn't have that consistency, whether it's injuries or suspension or sort of lack of focus. So you're taking a risk there if you're giving a really big contract to Aqib Talib.
We're joined by Pete Demolatis from Pro Football Focus. Pete, he talked about the offensive line, which we haven't talked about yet. And the Giants obviously doing a lot of reconstruction work on that offensive line. And, God, we can spend 10 minutes on each guy. But overall is a big picture last year. You got Kevin Booth as a free agent. It looks like Chris Knee's going to try to come back and play with his health. Who knows what he can give you. Will Beadie down here. And I guess the biggest bright spot in the offensive line had to have been Justin Pugh, the rookie, who after a rough first month really ended up playing pretty good football.
Yeah, and I think Giants fans decided back in September when they saw Eli getting pummeled by the Panthers' defensive line.
And that was a rough game. I mean, he had about 7 to 10 snaps in the first half where he got sacked.
It was comical at one point, seeing how, you know, where they just couldn't do anything to stop them.
And it wasn't just one guy. It was two or three guys getting on each play.
It was taker. It was a free-for-all. I mean, they, you know, Charles Johnson and Greg Hardy must have had a field day. I think everyone that day decided, okay, Giants need to get an offensive lineman in the first round of the draft, and I feel like everyone's just plowing forward with that mentality, even though that it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And the last caller made that point. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me at the 12th pick because
I agree. So I'm with you.
Their biggest need is on, you know, at guard and center, and there's just not a guy there to get. So everyone's saying, okay, well, we'll get an offensive tackle. That's how you get yourself into trouble if you're a general manager, because then you're drafting for need and you're not drafting the best player available. You're just taking who you know you're desperate for someone to help on the offensive line. And the fact is that, you know, Justin Pugh, he, out of all those heralded offensive tackles you had, like Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, Lane Johnson, you know, everyone, you know, all those top 10 guys in the first round, the best grade we gave to an offensive tackle last season was a rookie from the first round was Justin Pugh. So, you know, he, for a guy who everyone said the Giants reached for him, he beat out all those guys in his rookie season. So I don't know why you would want to move him inside just because you're desperate to get an offensive tackle in the first round and you just want to kind of shove Pugh aside. And Will Beadie, and the caller made the same point, Beadie had an awful season. He actually gave up the most sacks of any offensive lineman in the league. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts. He was poor. But the season before that, he was great. And the couple seasons before that, he was the Giants' best offensive lineman. So, honestly, I think you have to give him another chance because if he turns it around, he can be a huge asset for this team.
And not to mention the fact that Giants invested a ton of money in the last offseason, took a lot of guaranteed money. So, not exactly possible to cut bait. One other offensive lineman I want to get to you before we get to our next caller real quick. Kevin Booth, I know you guys didn't grade him out too well this year. Did he play better at guard or did he play better at center?
I thought he was better at guard. I think that's the position he's played the last couple seasons. He's played fine. He hasn't been, he hasn't been on another level. He hasn't been dominant, but he hasn't been, an eyesore. He had a bit of a negative grade this season, but I also give him a little bit of a pass. And this is what I was talking about. You can't take our grades as gospel because you have to realize, well, he was moving around a lot. He had, some rookies, some very inexperienced players next to him. He probably had a lot of responsibility on his plate, and that's kind of stuff that you can't always glean from film. So, yeah, he had a bit of a negative grade, but I also think that he had a pretty tough break there with the responsibilities he was given. So, a Booth, I think he would be fine to bring back as a sort of backup emergency player. I wouldn't hand him a starting job because I think you can find better in free agency, but I think he's a reliable, versatile offensive lineman.
201-939-4513. We're going to have some free agents rattled off here, I promise you. So just stay on it here. We're going to go to Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, what do you got for me, buddy?
I got a question for you, Giant. Will the Giants sign Zane Beadle from the Broncos to replace Kevin Booth at left guard?
Well, Tim, that's a good question. I think if you take a look at the offensive linemen you have in free agency, there are a lot of options and a lot of guys that maybe aren't big names that could help the Giants, especially inside, which is why a lot of fans have said, oh, go out there, bring in Michael Orr, bring in these tackles. I'm like, guys, you can get better interior linemen for less money because it's a less glamorous position, general in free agency. What do you think of Beatles and the other interior linemen available on the free agent market, Pete?
Beatles, I'm not particularly high on. He's never really stood out to us. He's been, he's had some good pass protection the last couple of seasons, but also I give a lot of, and that's another thing that you have to take into account when you look at these grades is that he had Peyton Manning on his team, and Peyton Manning has, we time the release of every quarterback, and Peyton Manning had the quickest release from snap to when he gets rid of the ball of any quarterback in the league. So he often makes his offensive linemen look a lot better than they are. Because he gets rid of the ball so quickly, and when teams blitz him, you're almost inviting him to beat you because he's so good at diagnosing where the hole is and where to zip it like right off the bat. So Beatles, he's had pretty good pass protection the last couple of seasons, but I'm not sure if he's going to be as good in an offense that requires a quarterback to hold the ball a little bit longer.
But there are a lot of offensive linemen out there that you do like that can play center, that can play guard, that maybe might not cost you the amount of money to sign, say, a guy like Alex Mack, who we all know the Browns are pretty hot and trying to bring back.
Yep, and I've heard, I've listened to the show the last couple of weeks. I've heard a lot of Alex Mack calls, and everyone's infatuated with him, and I can understand why. Since he entered the league, he's consistently one of our top 10 graded centers. He's very reliable. He doesn't miss any games, really. He's just a very, very safe option. My thing is, because he's so safe, you're going to have to pay top three money to a guy who's probably, the eighth, somewhere in that second tier of centers in the league. I don't think he's a dominant guy like a Max Unger from Seattle who actually had not a great season this year, but like a Nick Mangold who perennially has been a very good center and we're one of the best in the league. So honestly, if the Giants don't get Mac, and I don't think they will, I think the Browns are probably going to re-sign him. There's still a lot of good options out there. You'll have a Brian Della Puente from the Saints who, he's a bit of an inconsistent run blocker, but he's a great pass blocker for a Saints team who likes to throw the ball a lot, and they put a lot of trust in him because that team, the Saints' offensive line, is built around its guard and its centers because of Drew Brees' height. They want to keep that middle right in front of him as clean as possible. So, given that responsibility, he's played very well, and obviously the Giants would love that pass protection. Evan Dietrich Smith. I know the Giants fans have made a lot of connections between the Packers and the Giants, James Jones, Jermichael Finley, James Starks, but I think the best guy that fits for the Giants is Evan Dietrich Smith because he was our eighth highest graded center this season. He hasn't done well as a guard in the past for the Packers, but they moved him into center this year and he did very, very well. And honestly, also behind a carousel of quarterbacks who he has to work with. So honestly, if you're Ben McAdoo, and you want one guy to help bring the Packers offense to the Giants, what better than the center who knows all the calls and knows the signals and knows how to set up the pass blocking and the pass protection? I think Evan Dietrich Smith makes a lot of sense for the Giants. And if you even don't want to go that high, you've got guys like veterans like, you know, Fernando Velasco, who kind of filled in for Marquise Pouncey in Pittsburgh last year, did fine. Jonathan Goodwin from the 49ers, Roberto Garza from the Bears. So there's a good amount of guys out there where it's not, you know, Mac or bust for the Giants.
How about guard? How do you break down the free agents of the guard position? Anybody you think you might be able to bring in that'll give you better production than maybe what you would have to pay him?
I think, you know, you mentioned Jeff Schwartz, and he's our highest rated guard, or you have mentioned him in the past on the show. And honestly, I think you may not even though he's our highest rated guard, you may not have to pay him a lot because, you know, in the past we've graded some guys very highly. Last year, Brent Grimes, Michael was our highest graded cornerback. Michael Bennett was our highest graded defensive end, and they kind of were lingering out there, and they were signed to some pretty reasonable prove it deals.
No question.
Because a lot of times these guys, as sad as it is to say, they're haunted by their draft status. So if a guy was taken in the top three rounds, then, you know, a lot of coaches believe in him. He's going to get that big second contract. But you look at a guy like Grimes, who played in NFL Europe, and teams just seem to like disrespect you in free agency. And I think Schwartz is that kind of guy. You know, he wasn't a particularly, you know, heralded guy in his last few seasons. He bounced around between Carolina to Minnesota to the Chiefs, but he's always done well whenever they've asked him to step on the field. He, you know, even going back to 2010 with the Panthers, he earned a great grade from us. And then, you know, the next season, of course, you know, he just, you know, he got injured, and then after that he was relegated to backup duty again. So I think he's a guy who, even though we grade him highly and there's buzz around him, you might not have to break the bank to bring a Jeff Schwartz in.
201-939-4513. Let's start getting more rapid fire with these calls, guys. Give me one question. Pete will give you the answer, then we'll move on. Let's go to Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve-O, what's going on, bud? How are you?
What's happening? I'm doing great. You know why? Because your first caller validated everything I've been saying, even though you've been taking my comment to the wayside. I'm telling you, I'm going to stick to what I say, what my heart is telling me. I'm, you know, and I knew, looking, the eye test telling me what I've been saying all time, that Will Hill made the biggest difference on the defense. And I was the first person to say that, and I was, you know, I really felt like that's what was. I mean, I think that, you know, certain people stepped up, especially Justin Tuck, when it started to look like we had a better leader. But I think ultimately, you know, I think Will Hill made a difference. You know, Rose stepped up his game, and even it got Justin Tuck a little bit more motivated. But I'm just going to say this. I don't think we should overpay Beeson, like I've already been saying for, you know, the last couple months. With his, you know, his lack of cover skills and his size and his age and history, I just don't think it's a good idea. I just don't. And I've been adamant about saying, I know a lot of people have been saying, oh, we need to resign. No, I believe exactly what the last call said. He couldn't have said it better enough. You know, it really, to me, it's not worth the risk. At some point, you got to really move forward for the future. I personally, you know, I think he's maxed out. He was in a contract year. We've seen the best of Beeson. I just believe that. I don't know if we could even get that out of him this year. But, you know, so I'm done patting myself on the back here, John. Let me tell you, from now on, well, here's what I got. And I always want to say this last thing. I think we need to find a way to keep Linval. You cannot put a price tag on his reliability, his leadership, and what it's saying to the rest of the team. I know we have so many other defensive tackles, but I just think we ought to bring back Linval. I think he's a true giant in every sense of the word. So I'm going to leave that alone, but I want to make it clear. I think we're making a big mistake. Last thing I'm going to say, John, is this. I think we need to bring back a linebacker in the draft. What are the chances of Christian Jones, linebacker from Florida State, played every position, ended the season at middle linebacker, started off, I think, strong, weak side, or strong, then he went to weak side, then he ended up middle. I think he's 6'3". 240, I think he'd be a perfect fit for us. We need somebody who can cover, you know, and have some size to him. So I'll listen off the air, buddy. Thanks, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. And right now he's not projected to be a first-round pick, so that's the guy you look at around number two. And one thing I didn't ask you when we talked about Beeson before, and this is to Steve's point, What inside linebackers are out there in free agency potentially that you think would be a good fit for the Giants if Beeson, who by the way is representing himself in free agency, doesn't have an agent right now, gets a little crazy with his demands? Where could the Giants look in terms of middle linebacker, Pete?
I'm looking at three guys. One of them, the top guy, is Carlos Dansby. He might carry a higher price tag, but also given his age, he might not.
A little older, 32 years old.
And also, you know, he was a guy who, you know, he was signed to basically a nothing deal, you know, $2.25 million deal last year with the Cardinals after he was released by Miami. He sort of just, like, you know, went home to Arizona because not a lot of teams showed interest in him. And he led all inside linebackers with 8 sacks and 10 passes defense. So, you know, he was all over the field, and he brought more than just good run defense. We voted him to our Pro Bowl team. I know he made the Pro Bowl too, like the actual Pro Bowl, and he deserved to. So, I think maybe because of his age, you may not have to break the bank to bring him in here. But,
interesting.
You know, if he goes back to Arizona, you've got a couple other guys. Darryl Smith for the Ravens. He graded very highly with us when he was in Jacksonville. He was one of those guys who no one really knew because he was down there playing for the Jaguars, who constantly get overlooked, and you just kind of go there to be forgotten about. But he had always high grades from us. This season, he actually had a poor run defense grade, but he was very good in pass coverage. And if you ask me, would I rather have a linebacker who's great in run defense great in run defense and poor in coverage, or the other way around? I'd rather have the guy who's better in coverage.
It's a passing league.
It's a passing league, yeah. So Darryl Smith, I would rather have than John Beeson. He might cost a little more. So, you know, and the third guy I'm looking at is Brandon Spikes, who, had two, for the past two straight years, he had our highest run defense grade.
Yeah.
So he's not just, you know, a solid run defender. He's a great run defender. And he has his coverage liabilities as well, but not nearly as poor as Beeson was last season. So, and if it's not one of those guys, honestly, I'll tell you, I don't think the Giants really need a dominant middle linebacker, because, you know, when was the last time they had one after Antonio Pierce retired? Now you had, in 2011, who was the Giants' middle linebacker?
I mean, Michael Boley basically was their de facto one, and he's basically as good of a linebacker as they had since Pierce has left.
Exactly. So you had Boley there, and then everyone's worried about middle linebacker. But, you know, in 2011, they picked up Chase Blackburn
off, right?
You know, out of the classroom, and you know, and he comes in and he played well for them. But it just shows you that it's not the end of the world if you don't have, you know, a great linebacker. And the Giants, their defense, you saw from Perry Fuel, they're not really built on their linebackers. This isn't the 80s where they need that great linebacking core to be good. So I don't think Beeson's like a, you know, must bring back.
And Dansby and Smith, by the way, two guys that lasted in free agency a long time last year and didn't actually sign towards the end of the period, so something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
201-939-4513. Shakes is in Baltimore, Maryland. Shakes, what's going on?
Oh, yes, man. I've been itching to get. Since he said that middle linebacker statement, I've been itching to get on.
What do you got, bud?
Oh, you know that I believe. Now, first, let me start off as I say that you were a smart man when I was listening to you. First, when you mentioned the center from Green Bay, I like that idea. And I thought that was very smart, but then you got into that linebacker position
Shakes loves his linebackers. You got to be careful with him.
We don't need it? Man, come on, man. Come on, we need linebackers, man. They make impact. We haven't had none since. What? When we had Antonio Pierce, who was the other linebackers? Kawika Mitchell?
Yeah, Kawika Mitchell was on that team, yes, correct.
Who else? You know what I mean? Like, We never had a real strong impact linebacker core. Like
Reggie Torbore, I believe, was the third guy in that team, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and he's average. You know what I mean? So we need linebackers, man. It will change our team. I believe it. I know it. Since LT days, we have not had a good core of linebackers, and we need it. And that's what brings me to now. We need to bring back Beeson. I don't agree with Steve. We got to bring back Beeson. Now, Linval Joseph, he's big on Linval, and I love Linval. I mean, whatever to that, you know what I mean. But we got a lot of bodies, and the draft is very deep with defensive tackles. I mean, when I was looking at the combine, I was in awe.
Well, Shakes, in fairness, Shakes, this draft is pretty deep in pretty much every position. It's a very good draft.
I see. The cornerbacks is blowing my mind, especially Gilbert. Whoa, he says.
Yeah, 4-3-5 is not bad.
Oh, my gosh. If we can get Gilbert, it's over. If we got to resign Beeson, if we had Gilbert back there, I can only imagine.
You have a question, Shakes?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, do you believe that at number 12, Gilbert will be available for us?
I think either Gilbert or Denard will be available for Michigan State. I think one of the two will be there. Shakes, I think it's still pretty early. Let's see what these guys do on their pro days. But I believe one of those two guys would be available for the Giants at 12.
You think we're going to take them?
I think it's an option. I appreciate the call, bud.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Shakes. And let's talk about corner, because the Giants obviously had Prince on one side, had a very solid season. And, you know, Terrell Thomas is in the slot. Tremaine McBride played the other side. Where do you see the Giants' solutions lying at cornerback? Because right now the only guys on the roster are Prince, as I mentioned, Jaron Hosley, who has struggled mightily since he's come here in the third round of the draft, and an undrafted guy in Charles James.
Yeah, you know, I think the Giants, absolutely, they need to find a cornerback, like another starting caliber cornerback somewhere along the line, like free agency or if it's a top pick. But also, one thing you got to remember about the Giants is no matter where they take these guys, they're very, very – Coughlin is very averse to sliding a guy in to start from day one. And frankly, I don't even think – I know they did it with Pugh last season. I don't even think they would have done it with him if Deal didn't have his injury issues.
Well, Deal, Pugh, and – I mean, rather, Deal, Boss, and Snee, for that matter. All
I know. I think Pugh may have been just sort of a rotational guy that was forced to play his full season because of injuries. You know, even look at Jason Pierre-Paul. As good as he was, his rookie season, he was a rotational player. Same thing with Prince Amukamara. So I don't think you can expect to have a Denard or a Gilbert just step in and they're going to hand him, you know, 1,000 snaps for the first season. So what that means is I think you're going to have to get a solid starting cornerback in free agency. I thought Terrell Thomas did pretty well last season. He was a little up and down. He had his bad games, like against the Chargers, where Keenan Allen just kind of had his way with him. But you can bring back a Thomas or you bring back a McBride, who are both, you know, solid players, but I don't think you bring them back to be a starter. I think you kind of go after a guy like a Sam Shields or a Captain Munnerlyn or a Terrell Brown, who, you know, guy in that mid level who can step on the field and start for you and has the potential to be a, you know, top 20 cornerback in the league.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Anthony in New Hampshire. Anthony, what's up, pal?
Morning, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Anthony. And by the way, we are joined by Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. I should keep mentioning that for people that are joining the program late. Anthony, what's up?
Hey, I had a quick question about the Giants and their draft philosophy as far as stockpiling positions.
Yeah.
It kind of seems like every year they take a lot of defensive linemen and wide receivers in the first round and kind of like ignore or like reduce the linebacker and tight end position. And the problem is that when it comes to the starters getting injured, they don't seem to play the depth that they've drafted. Like 2 years ago, Hakeem Nicks got hurt, and instead of going and playing like Randall or Jernigan or Barden, they stuck with Nicks, and I feel like they kind of ruined him. Like, he's never been the same player since then. And I'm a little worried with them doing the same thing with JPP with his injuries this year. They haven't played, you know, the DeMontre Moores or the Mathias Kiwanukas instead. So I guess my question is, like, why are they drafting all these positions for depth? And then when the starters get hurt, they don't play the depth, even though the starters are ineffective as well.
Well, Anthony, I think that's a good question. I think a couple things you have to look at is that DeMontre Moore, even when he played this year on defense, he really didn't do a whole lot. And he was very quiet, and his body wasn't NFL ready coming out of college. And that's something he's going to have to get better at. And I think in terms of the draft, and, you know, Pete, this is something the Giants and Jerry say all the time. They're going to draft, you know, not necessarily completely disregarding need, but if somebody is clearly a better player on their board, that's who they're going to take, knowing that eventually he's going to have to play for you and he will play for you.
Yeah, and I think the thing to remember is that I think Reese is always drafting a year ahead. So when you're looking at the Giants draft, you don't just look at what they need right now. Think about what they're going to need from a year from now. And this is why I think Linval Joseph is the Giants really have no intention of re-signing him.
Jonathan Hankins.
It's because they drafted Jonathan Hankins last year knowing that Linval Joseph's contract was expiring. And unless Joseph, you know, pulled up out like a Geno Atkins, Gerald McCoy type season where they're like, whoa, we have to bring this guy back. You know, Joseph didn't. Joseph did what he always does. Solid run defense, not great pass rusher, and that's fine. But that's what the Giants are prepared to move on from with Hankins. Same thing with, you know, Demontre Moore. I think he's going to be a bigger factor this year. So when you're looking at, okay, who, you know, what rookies are going to step in and start for us, it might not be it. You might be better off looking at who did we draft last year that's going to start for us. So, you know, if you're a Giants fan.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel the same way. I just feel like, a Kiwanuka at 100% might be better than a JPP at 70% and then let JPP get to 100% so he can be the force that we know he can be.
Well, but Anthony, one thing I should note, and I know, Pete, you guys were pretty rough on Mathias Kiwanuka this year, and you could tell by his production and his numbers they weren't there, and the game tape kind of mimicked that. He did not have a very impactful year for the Giants.
He actually was one of our lowest graded 4-3 defensive ends. I'm not sure that it didn't. I believe it or not, I'm not sure if he's better off as a linebacker.
Which is amazing.
As crazy as that sounds, because he was drafted as a defensive end, but he traditionally from us has gained his best marks as a linebacker because he's able to sort of get in space and then play downhill, and he's been particularly good against the run. This season, it just seemed like he was overpowered a lot by tackles on the edge, and he didn't have as big of an impact. And even when he was getting sacks, you saw a lot of them where it wasn't him blowing by a man or shoving him back in the face of the quarterback. It was more of the quarterback holding the ball, wriggling around the pocket, and then Kiwi sort of got around his blocker to eventually get there. And Tuck, the same thing. Tuck, I know he had double-digit sacks, but you look at a lot of those sacks, even against the Redskins, where he had that 4-sack game.
A good 3 of them were coverage sacks.
Yeah, where they were in coverage, and RG3 was running around like a chicken without his head, and kind of Tuck just jumped on him. You give him credit for that, for finishing the play, but it's not like he was blowing by Trent Williams and embarrassing anyone.
Thanks for the call, Anthony.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, guys.
Hey, appreciate it. And how did you guys grade out Tuck this year, by the way? Because I know, obviously, big-time numbers. He was very good against the run. I assume you guys have him with a better run grade than a pass rush grade.
Yeah, absolutely. When people talk about Tuck's renaissance season, I agree. But I agree not because of the sacks, but for his run defense. I thought he was a very good run defender. He was, he earned one of our top 10 defensive end run defense grades this season. That was good because in the two previous seasons, other than that stretch in the 2011 playoffs where he looked like vintage Tuck, he was struggling a lot. He had a very good renaissance season. Honestly, like a lot of the Giants free agents, I don't think he's a must bring back. You know, everyone wants to retain their favorite guys, but on a team that had a lot of flaws, they had a decent record in the end, but definitely, they were a very flawed team.
Yeah.
I think you need to start looking towards the future and looking at bringing in some new blood and not just trying to hold on to guys who you have emotional attachments to. So I think, I would love to see Tuck come back because of his leadership. But I also, I don't think the Giants or Jerry Reese is going to cry any tears if he leaves for better money elsewhere.
We're joined by Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. And Pete, let's stick on the defensive line very quickly. Jason Pierre-Paul, obviously this guy has been fluctuating all over the map in terms of his performance as he's gotten into the league. How do you guys see him? Was it mostly his injury last year that really hindered him? Same thing, the final half season back in 2012, he was extremely quiet. How do you guys see Jason Pierre-Paul entering his free agent season?
Yeah, I think the injuries are the biggest factor for him. The funny thing is that everyone says Jason Pierre-Paul had a terrible season in 2012. We actually didn't see it that way. He was actually our top graded by a healthy margin, our top graded run defending.
Wow.
4-3 defensive end. He actually was great in that respect, and he was still fine as a pass rusher. He wasn't getting the sacks, but he was still applying pressure, moving the quarterback off his spot. That doesn't show up on the surface box score line, but did show up when we looked at the tape and in our stats.
Did you think he played significantly better the first half of the year compared to the second half, or is that just more a matter of the numbers not being there?
I think it was more honestly, I'd have to go back and look. I think it was more the matter of
interesting.
But I mean, this season obviously was just it was not good. I think he needs to get his injury straightened out. And hopefully get healthy, and then you can because. Honestly, that 2011 season, he was one of our top rated players.
Monster.
He was as disruptive as anyone you'll see out there. So, I think also the Giants are in a tough bind now because, if he does, you're almost damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because if he's great, then you're gonna have to pay up a lot to get him to bring him back. And if he's poor, then it's kind of a loss. So, but obviously you want to see him do great for this season. So hopefully he gets healthy and can be the player that we all know he can be.
We are still taking your calls for Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus at 201-939-4513. If you want to sneak in before the end of the show, we'll try to take you closer to 11 today if we can. Let's go to Frank in Tampa Bay, Florida. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, John. Good morning. I have a list of a few things I'd like to ask, so maybe I can run through them and you guys can decide what you have time or
sounds good, Frank.
To
rally
answer.
Them all for me.
And thanks. I was wondering, in the grading system, and a few things that are sort of subjective, but I was wondering if any of these are taken into consideration. For instance, the particular, individual or team opponent or, the teammates, like if due to injuries you've got a third string rookie playing next to you on the line, or things like the time of year, or the opponent team, is out of contention, mailing it in, or the time of the game, a blowout. Like at the end, to me, Tuck's numbers were inflated because he got most of his sacks and a lot of his tackles at the end of the season against teams that, you could kind of tell weren't really putting their whole heart into it. So I was wondering if those things are taken into consideration. And then also I was wondering if you take into consideration the scheme. For instance, how do you compare a linebacker or a defensive end when, one guy's got a scheme where he's got a blitz or drop back in a coverage and another where he never has to do that. And then things like a running back, if you've got a line like ours that can't block, how do you determine if a guy, actually can run? And then just lastly, I was wondering, so many times you look at the weight for these guys, and it's obviously changed so dramatically since, the combine or when they weighed in. Number one, did these guys ever get weighed or tested, when they're lifting or 40s or anything after, their first year? And if so, is that information available to you or anyone else? Because it seems like, it varies so considerably. You might have a guy that's now twice as strong or half as fast. And so just some things I was thinking about. And this is a joy to listen to today, so thank you.
Hey, I appreciate it, Frank. We'll get to all those answers, and you can listen online. Let's start first in terms of grading guys, in terms of what people he is around them. For example, you mentioned Kevin Booth, a lot of young guys around him moving around, for example. And do you take in consideration who they're playing the opponent?
So the thing to we do not take into consideration specific opponent. If you're beaten by JJ Watt for a sack, in our grading system, it's the same as if you're beaten by a backup defensive tackle who's only playing because some guy got hurt. So we don't take in strength of opponent. That might be something we look into going down the road, but that's also something we ask you to also take into account when you're looking at our grades. As far as scheme and responsibility, I think in general sometimes man coverage cornerbacks get docked a little bit by our grading system because we grade based on your responsibility on that play. So when we came up with our Pro Bowl team, we actually voted in Joe Hayden and Keenan Lewis, who two cornerbacks who were around in the 15s of our grades.
Right.
But we put them in because they played reasonably well, and also they were at their teams asked them, okay, we're gonna play cover one, cover zero. It's gonna be you in the slot following the best the other team's number one wide receiver.
You have no help. You're on an island.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah. So. So, you know, we definitely take that into account when we're evaluating players, but for the final grade, no, that hasn't been factored in yet. It might be down the road. But as far as what you mentioned, garbage time, stuff like that, yes, that is taken into account. So if a so if a team is up 21 points in the fourth quarter, like late in the game, you know, we have some checks and balances so that our grades are neither too high or too low, when obviously you can tell a lot, some of the players aren't even putting forth 100% effort. So that is something that we do take into account.
The final thing he asked, too, was about the scheme. Do you take the scheme into account? And I suppose what you guys do, no matter what these guys are being asked to do, you grade them on their effectiveness of accomplishing that particular goal on that play.
Exactly. So the one thing to, you know, we're not scouts, and we're, you know, we mentioned we're not scouts and we're not statisticians. We're somewhere in the middle. We're performance analysts. So we're not running, you know, just a data, you know, numbers through a spreadsheet, you know, like pulling it from the NFL sites and popping out a number. I know some other sites do that, and it's a great way, I think, to look at team performance and team effectiveness. But we're also not scouts in that I'm not going to tell you that, oh, well, you know, Will Beatty's being beaten because, you know, he's not getting far enough back in his stance, or, you know, he's getting beaten because, you know, he's got his hands too far together, you know, or he's not getting low enough. We'll just tell you that he's getting beaten. He's getting beaten on an outside rush, an inside rush, a bull rush. So, you know, we're not grading technique, but we do grade basically, you know, what you do on that play given the assignment that you're handed. So, you know, we're looking at the – so believe it or not, we've given some offensive linemen a positive grade when they block a guy, like when they're turned around with their back and they sort of fall into him. But, you know, your job was to clear that guy out of the hole, and you did it clumsily, and I'm sure the coach is going to say, like, what the heck are you doing? But believe it or not, like, you got that guy out of the hole, and the running back ran through for 5 yards because of what you did. So you're getting a positive grade. So it's – you know, sometimes it's a little wacky, but, you know, we grade players by what their performance is on the assignments they're given.
Yeah, you mentioned running backs, and so did Frank, our last caller, and that's one thing we really haven't talked much about. How did you guys grade out Andre Brown? How did you guys grade out Peyton Hillis in the time he was here with the Giants? How well did those guys actually play?
They did, you know, they did reasonably well. They weren't great. I thought Brown was better the season before. You know, the fumble, you know, the Giants running backs had a decent amount of fumbles this year too.
Yep.
That's always going to hurt you. You know, I think like the big difference you saw with the Giants this season, I was worried about it after they let Ahmad Bradshaw go, is pass protection was a big problem for them this year. Bradshaw, he actually, you know, the Giants running backs surrendered 5 sacks in pass protection this year. Bradshaw in his whole time with the team surrendered 3 sacks total in those you know, 5 seasons. He was consistently one of the best pass blocking running backs in the league. You know, in my opinion, only Maurice Jones-Drew is better. But you know, I think the Giants struggled to replace that after he left, and everyone saw David Wilson's issues in pass protection. But you know, you saw some guys like Andre Brown and Peyton Hillis have struggles as well over there. So you know, I think that, you know, I think that the Giants, I see some people talk about James Starks to the Giants, obviously for the McAdoo connection. I don't think that's a good fit because he's kind of the same player that David Wilson is.
He doesn't pass protect well?
Well, no, not even along those lines. I'm talking more about, you know, when he's running, you know, he has a high yards per carry, but he's always injured.
Right.
So you already have that with David Wilson on the team. So why are you going to add another guy who, you know, what happens when they're both injured? Then what are you going to do? So honestly, if I'm the Giants, you know, I would look at a guy more along the lines of like a Toby Gerhardt, who has been healthy for most of his career, or all of his career almost, and he, you know, he's a reliable guy. He's not going to command a lot of money. You know, like a Rashard Jennings, who I know you're a big fan of.
I have a man crush on Rashard Jennings. There's no question about it.
But yeah, you know, a guy who's fine. You know, Jennings has his issues in pass protection, but you know, I think, you know, he can, and also he actually had a pretty poor season before this one, but he looked good last year, and you know, I think you need some reliable presence back there.
See, that's interesting. So he has struggled in pass protection a little bit.
Yeah, he has struggled in pass protection.
Okay,
yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Or, you know, if the Giants even want to get a little crazy, maybe bring in a guy like LeGarrette Blount, who I don't think his personal, his off the field stuff matches what they do. But you know, he would be a good, you know, battering ram running back as a contrast to, you know, the shifty Wilson, if, you know, hopefully if Wilson's healthy again.
How'd you guys see Knowshon Moreno?
Knowshon Moreno was good. You know, he did really well. I think a lot of it obviously is also you always on the Broncos offense have to attribute some of it to Peyton,
right?
You know, because Peyton put him in, and even you know you look at when they played the Giants, you know, the Giants had to sort of drop everyone back to stop the pass, and Peyton saw the, you know, the 6-man box, and he just gave it to Moreno, and he just running free through the middle of the field. So you know, I thought Moreno was good, but I also think Moreno might cost a lot more than you would want to invest if you're the Giants, considering what you just invested with Wilson with the first-round pick.
Two other veterans I want to ask you about. Is their drop in production more to do with their weak team around them and a bad offensive line, or are their skills diminishing? And the two guys I'm asking about are Maurice Jones-Drew and Chris Johnson.
Maurice Jones-Drew, I think, weak team around him. Chris Johnson, I don't think, was ever as good as everyone thinks he was. Even in his 2,000-yard season, he wasn't our top-graded running back. He had some great pass blocking. You know, he was running behind those Kevin Mawai Titans lines where he, you know, they opened up a lot of holes for him, and he would just take it to the house, and that's great. But in the years since then, I mean, if I had a dime for every time I saw Chris Johnson just, like, you know, try to bounce it outside and turn a 1-yard gain into a 5-yard loss to basically kill a drive. And you know, my pet peeve about Johnson is every year it's something else. It's never him. You know, it's the coaching, or it's the scheme, or now it's the offensive line. And last year they drafted Chance Warmack, and he's like, oh, thank God. And now it's, you know, it's something else that, you know, it's never his fault. And I think sometimes, you know, you have to look at yourself in the mirror and see, well, you know, he doesn't trust his offensive line. He's not breaking a lot of tackles. And, you know, if you give him the, you know, a big hole, he can take it 80 yards for a touchdown. But a lot of guys can. So, you know, I don't think he's as special as a lot of people think he is. Maurice Jones-Drew, on the other hand, I think he is a very good running back. I'm not sure if he's going to be more than the Giants are willing to spend, probably. But, you know, he's one of those guys who has often gotten a good grade from us despite not running behind the best lines. Even this year, you know, they had some guys on that Jacksonville line that had no business being an NFL starter. So, yeah, you know, two big differences between those two guys.
201-939-4513. Joe's in Pennsylvania. Joe, good morning. Joe, you there, buddy?
Hello?
Hey, I'm sorry. Roldy, is that you?
Yeah, Roldy.
Hey, Roldy, what's up, man? Joe, hang on. We will get to you next. Roldy, what's going on?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Pete. Pete, by the way, I'm glad you're letting the Giants fan know it doesn't make sense to go after offensive linemen in the first round, especially when we need a lot of mostly guards and center. I'm glad that you mentioned that. But two questions. I know I'm one of the guys that would love to have Justin Tuck and John Beeson back at our number, but if we do lose Justin Tuck, I mean, is there any chance we could bring Adrian Tracy back, or with the second round, do we draft the offense an outside linebacker, or do we go after a defensive end? And that was the only thing that I really wanted to ask. And thank you, Pete, once again, for letting Giants fan know that don't get too crazy. There's a lot of tackles in the first round. We need guards and centers. Thank you. I'll get off the phone and get your answer.
All right, thanks, Roldy. And I think Justin Tuck's interesting. If he doesn't come back, the Giants do have a hole they need to fill, a defensive end. Now, you could theoretically move Colin Jenkins out there, but he's not going to give you the pass rush ability that you would like to have out of an end. And, you know, Pierre Paul with the shoulder injury, Kiwanuka, not a lot of production. What could be some Giant options if Tuck doesn't come back?
I think Demontre Moore, I mentioned it already, but I think he's a very key player. I think he's due for a big jump in snaps. Actually, it's a shame he got hurt early in the preseason, because that first game, he had the highest, and for the first year, we actually started grading preseason games this year. So if you want to see that too, if you get a premium subscription to Pro Football Focus, you'll see a lot of the grades, you know, as we go through, and you'll see some of the guys who, you know, teams are cutting and who could be a good addition to your team.
Interesting.
Around cut
great
time.
Point.
But Moore, actually, he had the highest grade of a 4-3 defensive end in that first week of preseason in the league. So, you know, he had a lot of production there. He flashed a lot, and unfortunately, I think the injury, when you get injured in preseason, if you're a rookie, it comes back to haunt you. It takes a lot of your playing time out, and I'm glad the Giants were able to get him back in the rotation a little bit later in the year. He wasn't exactly dominant, but I saw some good stuff from him, and I think that, you know, he could be a really key factor for them this year. So, you know, Tracy, he hasn't gotten a ton of snaps, so, in his career, when he has, he's been pretty decent, but I see him as more of a rotational guy. It's going to be tough to go in with Kiwanuka and Jason Pierre-Paul, given Pierre-Paul's injuries, and just DeMontre Moore. But, you know, you never know if they sign a guy like an Everson Griffin or, you know, a guy like a Willie Young who has been a tantalizingly talented for a few years now.
Tantalizingly talented. Right, I like that.
He's one of those guys who he'll do well in preseason or in the beginning of the year, and then he kind of sort of falls off. And he had a pretty good year this year. But, you know, I could see them bringing in a guy like him or Robert Ayers for some depth. And then, you know, if Pierre-Paul gets hurt and Moore, you know, doesn't kind of pan out in his second year, you can still have a guy there to take a starter's share of the load.
201-939-4513. Now let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's going on?
Good morning there. I'm seeing that this is a very deep draft, and the Giants have high draft picks. And I was hoping, say, like the first round, they get a cornerback that put in there just like the guys from Arizona. Put him in there. He's starting right off the bat. Maybe the second round we get a tight end. Get in there. He's starting right off the bat. And then maybe in, like, the second or third round, we get that guard or center, that somebody that's close to Dallas's top draft pick last year, a center, and they put him in there and start it right off
Travis
the bat.
Travis Frederick you're talking about.
Right. And shouldn't the Giants be able to pick somebody up equivalent to him? I don't know how he panned out in his grading. And put him in there from the beginning and let him play. And I said we get an impact player like a guard, starting like the guy from Arizona, I forget his name, really good cornerback.
Justin Gilbert you're talking about?
Get him in the first round and put him out right there and play, and they should be playing just like we're not going to wait like we did on Jernigan. Pew panned out well. Other teams put starters in there, like I say, from day one, like Frederick from Dallas and that, and they play and they seem to do well. So I was hoping the Giants' philosophy would turn, and maybe out of the first three draft picks, they have at least two starters there.
Hey, look, Joe, and I think you can get some starters in the first three rounds of this draft. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Pete, do you guys track what positions for rookies are guys more likely to impact in their rookie years? Do you guys have any type of study like that, or is it really dependent from player to player?
You mean like projecting them for where they'd be best coming out of college?
Now, for example, do some positions lend themselves to making it easier for a rookie to contribute right away than others? Like, the rookie cornerback struggle more, say, than a rookie wide receiver, things of that nature.
Yeah, we actually, our rookie of the year this year on the defensive side of the ball was Desmond Trufant for the Falcons. And I know that the Jets fans were very, very upset because they thought Sheldon Richardson should have been our defensive rookie of the year. And personally, you know, I would have given it to him as well, but I know that a lot of guys on our team argued that Trufant should have gotten it because, you know, he wasn't as dominant at his position as Richardson was at his, but Trufant, I mean, playing cornerback as a rookie is an incredibly tough thing to do. And I think, honestly, as far as other positions, I think it depends on the scheme. And I think this is... as far as the Giants go, I always thought this was why you see some rookie wide receivers struggle with the Giants. And I think this is why you saw Reuben Randle struggle last year, too, because Kevin Gilbride's system was very demanding on wide receivers. Gilbride's offense, you know, there's the run and shoot as a pure offense no longer exists, but
right.
its principles are still used. Every no offense really dies. It just gets you know,
absorbed into something
exactly,
else.
Exactly. So for and the run and shoot was always predicated on sight adjustments by wide receivers. So it was almost like when you're on the playground, you don't have any plays, and they say, "Oh, just go out, get open." And what you do is you know, you see a guy, you know, playing you on the outside, so you just run inside. The run and shoot was basically a more organized form of that, and that's what Gilbride's offense was had a lot of wide receiver sight adjustments, where a wide receiver sees something and he has to say, okay, well, based on what coverage I'm seeing right now, which direction am I going to run in? And you're hoping that the quarterback is reading the same thing, and it was, if it worked, it was almost unstoppable. I thought the best example of the Giants wide receiver or Kevin Gilbride's offense was that Victor Cruz touchdown to beat the Redskins two seasons ago, where, you know, last minute, Cruz saw that they left the middle of the field wide open. Eli saw the same thing. Cruz, you know, had an option route on that route, and he said it after the game, and he just ran it right up the seam, and Eli hit him, touchdown, game one.
Yeah, if you remember that play, he saw the safety. Rather than the safety turning his hips and going deep, he sat down.
Yep.
Perpendicular to Cruz.
And they both read it the same way.
Right.
The downside of it is that you'll see with Reuben Randle this year,
in the Bears game specifically.
Yeah, you know, you'll see, and you saw a lot of those plays. It was even Knicks and Cruz had some of those too, where you know the Eli's throwing the comeback and the wide receiver's running down the field and that's an easy pick six. So I mean, that's why I think that it's going to be easier for a wide receiver, the young ones, and also I'm optimistic about Randle and Jernigan this season to adjust to McAdoo's offense, because I think it's going to be fewer of those sight adjustments and more of, okay, this is your route, you're going to run this route. It may not be as explosive, but you're not going to get those crippling interceptions that you saw a lot of last season. So I think that's going to help.
Now, McAdoo did use a lot of, or at least the Packers used a lot of back shoulder throws, which is to some level a sight adjustment between the corner and wide receiver. So that's going to carry over. Mm-hmm. You mentioned you're optimistic about Randle and Jernigan. And you can wrap Akeem Nicks into this equation, too, if you like. How do you see the Giants' wide receiver position shaping out this year? Do you think they need to either make a quote-unquote splash in free agency, use a high draft pick and a wide receiver, or can they go to war with Cruz, Randle, Jernigan, see what happens?
I think they're going to – I thought they drafted Randle with the intention of – I mean, I think he fell to them, but I think they drafted him with the intention of him replacing Nicks. I thought that they, you know, they were always going to re-sign Cruz. So
I agree with you.
So, you know, I'm optimistic. Honestly, there's one guy in free agency who I would love to see the Giants add, and I don't think he'll be a ton of money, and I think that's Golden Tate. I think that –
You like the size there?
Even – you know, he's not the biggest guy, but we do a free agent duel series in the off season where myself and another analyst at Pro Football Focus we'll debate whether a team should re-sign one guy over another. And I argued for the Seahawks. I don't think this will happen, but I argued that they should sign Golden Tate over Michael Bennett, because Tate does a lot of things, that don't come across in the surface stats, but you know, come across on film, and it makes a difference in the game.
Like an example,
he actually had 21 forced missed tackles on his receptions this year, were the most by any wide receiver. And if you look at his, he actually forced a missed tackle on one of every three catches.
Wow.
Over the last three seasons, and that's by far the best of any starting wide receiver in the NFL. Better than Percy Harvin, better than a lot of these other guys like a Demaryius Thomas, who you see like catching these screens and taking it to the house. Golden Tate was incredibly elusive. Also, he only had 5 drop passes in the last three seasons. In my mind, he has the best hands in the NFL. And on a season where you saw Akeem Nicks drop 7 passes, and we know Victor Cruz has had his drops in recent memory, I think that having someone with reliable hands would be great. And also, Tate, he's not the tallest guy, but he has an ability to pinpoint the ball and go up and reach it at its highest point, where you'll see him make a lot of contested catches that guys taller than him mess up, because they don't have that ability.
He seems to play bigger than he actually is, and he's very physical out there, too.
Yep, and the biggest reason why I think the Giants he'd be a great addition to the Giants is he was by far our highest-graded punt returner this year. He didn't have any punt return touchdowns. He didn't lead the league in yards, in yards per return. But he was incredibly good at making up for some blocking and taking full advantage of it. He didn't fumble a lot. He didn't put his team in bad spots. He always basically was he was that kind of guy who was always able to get you those extra 10, 15 yards on a punt return that a lot of other guys don't get you. And on a team where they've been trying to rotate, you know, Ruben Randall and Jernigan and other guys back there, I think having him as a punt returner would be a real game changer in an area where you don't have to break the bank to get a game changer. So a guy like Golden Tate, I think, would be a huge addition to the Giants. I'm not sure if it'll happen, but you know, I'll stand up and clap if it does.
So you think if Tate had been on a more pass-oriented team the last couple of years, his numbers would be a lot better?
I think so. You know, and that's not to say I don't think he'll ever be like a 1,200, 1,300-yard receiver, but he's always going to be that guy that tests the defenses, that can come up with those big plays when you really need him to. And the special teams contributions is something that, you know, it's not going to get you, you know, to the Pro Bowl as a receiver, but that's something that does not go unnoticed when you look at the final score.
All right, let's go to our final call of the show. That's Antonio in New York City. Antonio, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing well, Antonio. What's up?
Well, I agree with everything where the guy said. You know, making plays in defense is very important, and you need that. But from what I've seen from this season, oh my gosh, Lord have mercy. I wanted to be on ESPN and say what I have to say, because it was just such a sloppy year for defense and offense. You know, so it's like I hope it becomes a better year. You know, so I really do want to see how this offensive coordinator is going to work. Is he going to be like Kevin Gill? You know.
Hey, look, I think Tom Coughlin addressed that at the draft, where it's going to be a melding of what the Giants have done here before and what McAdoo did in Green Bay.
Yeah, of course, you know, but I think it should be good offense, but it's always different, you know. Like, can wide receivers step it up? That is the main key. He did in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. He's always finding somebody, and somebody's always stepping it up. So it's like, they have to see how they're going to do on the offense, you know?
All right, Antonio, thanks for the call, bud.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, man. What do you think about Knicks? Did he grade out as poorly as he looked but from Giant fans watching him on TV?
He did. You know, he didn't have a good grade from us. He wasn't terrible.
How about 2 years ago? Was his grade 2 years ago pretty poor too?
No, 2 years ago. Here's the funny thing. 2 years ago, it was actually pretty good. And the year before was pretty good. And this is the thing I think with the Knicks is he's going to be the Mike Wallace of this year's free agency.
Someone will pay him.
He's going to be that guy who
did not
have a good contract year, and then all of a sudden on free agency, he's going to get that contract where everyone's going to scratch their heads and say, wow. And I know free agency is stacked this season. I know you've got, you know, your Eric Decker, you've got Jeremy Maclin, you know, you've got your, you know, a lot of good guys out there.
Riley Cooper, by the way, off the board today.
Yep.
To Philadelphia.
Yep. But you know, you have a good amount of guys out there. You have Julian Edelman even, but none of those guys has the potential that Knicks had has, and it's that potential he showed in the 2011 postseason, and it was the second. We've been grading since 2008, but it was the second highest grade we've ever given to a wide receiver for a single postseason.
Wow.
Behind that legendary Larry Fitzgerald Cardinals Super Bowl run. Postseason. So, I mean, Knicks, that was at him at his best. You know, he was dominant. You know, in a season where the Giants' running game was ranked 32nd at the end of the regular season, which everyone seems to forget, and their offensive line was not particularly good. Like Knicks and Eli and the other receivers carried that team.
They did.
And I think last season, looking at the film, I agree that I don't think he was giving as much effort. I can understand why the coaches are hinting at that after the season. I saw some routes where, you know, he's running a crossing route and he's just kind of like lollygagging across the field on a third down, and you're scratching your head like, what are you doing? I think that some team is going to pay him for that potential, and I don't think the Giants are going to be able to bring him back cheap, and I think they in their minds have already moved on anyway.
All right, I'm looking at our questions on Twitter. I think we pretty much covered most of the stuff people are asking. So the last position I'll ask you about, I think we've pretty much touched on everything, if I'm not mistaken, tight end. And the Giants sit here with basically zero tight ends on their roster except for the enigmatic Adrian Robbins that everybody's kind of waiting to show up and do something. And from the layman's look at the free agent listed tight end, there doesn't seem to be that many really huge impact guys out there. But who do you think – fits well with what the Giants like to try to do. And, you know, Ben McAdoo's new system, we know this, but Tom Coughlin's going to want his tight end to block. That's just the way he is.
Yes.
So what guy can the Giants bring in that can give you a little bit as a receiver, catch you 50 balls, but also be a plus guy in the blocking department?
Honestly, you know, I liked the Michael Bennett signing, or sorry, Martellus Bennett signing, 2 seasons ago, because the season prior when he was with Dallas, he earned the it was the second highest blocking grade of any tight end behind Rob Gronkowski, and he didn't have a lot of catches, but you know, the Eli and that staff are able to kind of coach up these tight ends who are good blockers to be pass catchers.
Jake Ballard, for example.
Yeah, that's exactly. Jake Ballard didn't do anything in college, then came in, was an effective receiver. And that's why I scratched my head when they got Brandon Myers, because he was actually our worst graded blocker the season prior coming to the Giants, and worst grade blocking tight end. And he was already an accomplished receiver, so it's sort of like the opposite of what they normally do. So, you know, I would almost give a flyer on a guy like a Ben Hartsock, who he was with the Panthers. He actually earned our highest blocking grade of any tight end this season. Like, he's never been a good pass catcher. But, you know, he can still, the Giants might be able to get something out of him where, you know, you can't get lower production than Ballard did in college and then, you know, come out to be a pass catcher. That was one of those things where it almost convinced me the Giants could make a pass-catching tight end out of anyone as long as they bring some good blocking. So I think Hartsock would be a pretty good addition for them. And
two other names I want to give you real quick. Yeah. How about Quarles and Chandler, two guys that could be available out there?
You know, Chandler, he's ever graded highly from us. Quarles has just been, you know, he's been fine. You know, I think both guys would be fine for like a depth kind of guy. Who, you know, I think the Giant, like I said, and this might be different. Gilbert's not there anymore. You know, Mike Pope's not there anymore. But they always seem to get more out of their tight ends than you initially see. So, you know, I would be okay with either of those guys coming to the Giants, because, you know, I think they can work with them, and I think that, you know, they can, Eli can make good receivers out of those tight ends who on other teams didn't really excel a lot.
It'll be interesting to see what Mike Pope can do with Gavin Escobar down there in Dallas next year. They have very high hopes for us. That'll be
absolutely
interesting to see.
Yeah.
Pete, this has been fantastic. Yep. One more time, Pete Demolatis from Pro Football Focus. Break down what you guys do, what your website is, your premium service, which I know is what you guys are really trying to get out there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what it's all about before we say goodbye.
Yep, so Pro Football Focus, we're the only website that grades every player on every play in every game. So, you know, on Sunday, after you guys watch the game and you're all sort of breaking it down on the message boards and talking to your friends, we're looking through the film and we're looking at what every player is doing. We're marking where they are, who's blitzing, who's blocking, how good a job they're doing. And then we're putting that all on our site. So,
when do they come in, the grades, after Sunday games?
So they come in on Monday. A lot of them come in like first thing Monday morning. So you'll wake up in the morning at, you know, like 7 a.m. and you'll see a lot of them already up there. Then, you know, they'll trickle in, you know, throughout Monday. And really by 3 o'clock, we basically have all the games in there on Monday. So it's a pretty quick turnaround. And you know, if you subscribe to our premium stats, it's $27 for the year or $26.99, and you get a whole – and this is actually how I was first introduced to Pro Football Focus a few years ago. I was looking to see, you know, oh, people are voting for the best offensive lineman in the Pro Bowl. Like, let me see if there's anything out there that tells me how good an offensive lineman is. And we're still the only site where you can go and you can see offensive lineman grades and see, you know, who on the Giants is the best run blocker and who's the best pass blocker and how many, not just sacks that they've given up in pass protection, but how many quarterback hits and quarterback hurries and, you know, and which cornerbacks are giving up the most yardage and which linebackers are making the most tackles around the line of scrimmage. So, you know, if you sign up for a premium stats, you get all that. And if you go to our site, you'll see a lot of good articles there. You know, we're coming up with our team needs and our team values. So, you know, we kind of look at each team, each player, and how, you know, what their salary was this year and how their production related to that and who's the most overpaid and underpaid players in the league. So, you know, we're cranking, you know, football season's over, but we all know it's never really over. We're still doing a lot of stuff on Pro Football Focus. So, if you come by, you know, or you can even hit me up on Twitter, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. And Yeah, it's it's a very good site.
That is at @PFF_Pete, correct?
Yep.
Very good. Check it out, folks. He does a great job. Pete, appreciate the time, man. Fantastic. And before the draft, do you feel like coming back on?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Awesome. Pete Damalatis from Pro Football Focus did a fantastic job today. We thank you for joining us. Good job by the callers on the phones, on Twitter. Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning on Giants.com. Everybody have a good one.